Okay, there's this is we're finally sort of getting around to disciplining children proper here, or raising, dealing with discipline in the home. I boiled down really raising kids or raising faithful children to two main ideas, and they are discipline and paying attention. So if you discipline, and if you pay attention, if you discipline in a biblical way and pay attention to your kids, then I believe you're going to be a successful parent and have faithful children. What do I mean by discipline? By discipline, I don't mean spanking them, although spanking them is included in discipline. By discipline, I mean having a disciplined home. And so much of that starts with what I've already talked about in relation to even the commands to Israel. So the Lord's Day Sabbath, keeping the feast, tithing, loving your neighbor. If you do these things consistently, you don't even have to think about them. That's what discipline is. It's something that's done over and over and over such that it becomes a habit. It's just the way that you live. It's the way that you do things. So having a home like that is necessary to having people that feel safe and secure. They know the order of your life is very regular, and it's good and beautiful. When I was younger, I didn't think of myself as a very disciplined person. I still have difficulty in some ways of doing the same things over and over and over and being really consistent at it. So in one sense, I don't think of myself as a lot of you guys are military people, you know, you have very disciplined, orderly lives. And I didn't think of myself that way. But as I look back on the way that we raised our kids, we did do a lot of the same things every day. Our lives were very orderly. You know, we got up in the morning and they had breakfast together, and Katie did, you know, we homeschooled most of our kids. We did a lot of different things with schooling, but a lot of the time was homeschooling, and Katie did that with the kids. I came home from work. We had dinner together virtually every single night, with almost no exceptions, and we had a nice dinner together as a family. After dinner, I would read to the kids. And we would sit on the couch and read. I read to them dozens and dozens of books. We read Narnia every time one of our children turned five, we would read Narnia. So I read through Narnia, the whole series, you know, six different times with our kids. I read, you know, this is out loud reading with the kids. I read the whole Lord of the Rings series twice, you know, and we read dozens and dozens of other books. But that's something we just did. We loved it. It was just our time, and we read great books, and all of our kids grew up to love great literature and great books and time together. So you don't necessarily have to do that. I would highly recommend that, especially dad sitting with the kids and reading to the kids and that time spent with them and time spent in good literature. But just the orderly routines. You might have other things that you do as a family, but everybody should know what the order is. It's just like clockwork. Going to church is not something that's ever up in the air. We were very, you know, for much of our life, I wasn't a pastor when I was raising kids. I became pastor when my oldest was 10, so we did raise a lot of them in the church while I was a pastor. But even before that, going to church was never a decision that we had to make. We always got ready for Sunday on Saturday. We would work extra hard on Saturday and then make sure we didn't stay up late on Saturday night. We generally didn't do events on Saturday night. If we did, we would try to get home early because we wanted to be rested. We wanted to be ready to go on Sunday. And that was just such a vital thing. As our kids got older, became teenagers, occasionally they'd be doing something. And you know, Liberty University, a lot of our kids went to Liberty. They have these, what do they call them, those coffee nights or something that would do it. But sometimes they get over 2 o'clock in the morning. And we didn't like our kids doing that on Saturday night. But I said, look, yes, you can go, but No excuses in the morning. I don't want to hear I'm tired. I don't want to hear any excuses. We get up, we go to church, we embrace. And our, the kids embrace that. They love that. They never made excuses about going to church because it was just so much a discipline of who we are. That's just what we do. You know, you've done this with many of your children, tithing even, having them tithe from the first time they make money when they're 3 or 4 years old, and they always tithe, and they, you know, I love to see it at the little kids at our church. They come and they're so proud of how much money they can give. You know, I made $100. I can give $10. They want to give more because God is blessing them make more. But that kind of thing where just so much of your life, there's not even, you don't even have to think about it. It's just plugged in. This is just who we are. This is just what we do. So when I say discipline, I mean that as well as consistently having consistent standards that you hold people accountable to. That's also discipline. And the other thing is, you know, paying attention. Our task, as I've mentioned, is not just to make everyone obey, but wanting everybody to love what we love. So that's the paying attention part. That's the art part. What's going on in their little hearts? You know, when they sin and they're disciplined, is it restored? Is my fellowship with my child restored? Is their fellowship with the Father restored? And if something is amiss, some of you have experienced this. I remember when we had times where with one of the children, something was amiss and they're just out of sorts. You know, they're 7 or 8 or 9 years old and they haven't done any big sin that you can see. You can't really figure it out, but something is just wrong. But if you're not paying attention, you don't see that something is just wrong. Generally, what we would do in such situations, maybe not when they're 9, but when they're 5 or 6 or 7 and we're still, you know, actively spanking them. When a child has a bad attitude like that, you just look for a reason to spank them. Anything will do now. You know, okay, gotcha, and the spanking, and then you can sort of get that restoration, and it's a reset for the child. But you have to pay attention to your kids in order to do that. I often do a spanking apologetic, as I mentioned. I do that talk, spanking is funny. I'm not going to do that today. But if you're a younger person, just because I'm seeing this crop up more, younger families who want to do the gentle parenting kind of thing, and they don't believe in spanking their kids, there's another way to do it. I want to say to you, no, there isn't. This isn't a methodology in the Bible. It's a principle in the Bible. And so if you're not spanking your children, then you're not doing it God's way. And you have time to change, but if you don't change, there's big consequences, and they get a lot more difficult if you don't use God's means when your children are little. Here, just a couple of scriptures, and then I'm going to move on from this. But Proverbs 13:24, he that spares his rod hates his son, but he that loves him chasteneth him betimes. So, talking about the rod is spanking the child. Proverbs 22, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. So the rod is another means for driving foolishness out of the heart of your children, especially when they're really, really little. Now, you could take sort of a spiritual application in this, say, well, that just means disciplining in some way. It doesn't mean actually spanking them or hitting them. Why would you hit your child? You hear that sort of thing. Proverbs 23 says this, though. Apply thine heart unto instruction and thine ears to the words of knowledge. Withhold not correction from the child. For if thou beatest him with a rod, and that was where my comment, you can beat them into submission, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with a rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell. You can't get sort of a spiritual application out of that one. It's talking about physically whacking them with some sort of implement, preferably not your hand. People used to say, oh, don't use your hands because your hands are supposed to be for loving. I didn't use my hands because it hurt my hand. It doesn't hurt the stick so much if you use a spanking spoon. Our children, when they were little, would march around. I used to do kind of these. I wasn't a military guy, but I would make them line up and do formation and march in place and do all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that they did is they would march around my living room, and my kids would say, You shall beat them with a rod and they shall not die. And that was part of the fun and the fun in my home. I mean, they knew they were going to get spanked. And when the older ones were learning obedience and the younger ones got spanked, they thought that was funny then. The Bible calls you to discipline your children this way. And if in the home where things are beautiful and good and you can get some distance from the reason you're spanking them, you don't do it out of anger. You know, when I say beat them into submission, I think you get the picture of a guy in a wife beater t-shirt whacking his kids. That's not the right picture. It's really dispassionate, and you're separated from the emotion of it. And the Bible describes it this way: Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. So what is your qualification for disciplining other people or for correcting other people? It's that you're spiritual. And this is also true of your children. In some ways, maybe it's easier for dad because dad is not with the kids all day and tension's building and disobedience is building. I think moms sometimes can get frustrated. That's why sometimes it's dad to the rescue at the end of the day, especially if you're homeschooling and you got a lot going on at your home. When dad comes home, I believe dad should be the enforcer. Dad should be the one that spanks the kids, gives mom a break, but it also helps the kids see dad through mom, which enables them to realize, okay, if I don't obey mom, there's still going to be an accountability, and actually dad spanks harder, so I'd rather have it be mom anyway. So you want that to be happening. But you shouldn't spank your kids in anger. Okay, so some of you are saying, well then, how could I ever spank them? Because I only spank them when I'm angry. Well, you have to spank them, and you can't spank them when you're angry. So what are your options? When we serve communion, we say at our church, we invite you to the Lord's Supper. If you're baptized in Christ, walking with the Lord, then come and eat with us. You belong to Christ, you belong to us. And the Bible, our confession teaches, you know, examine yourself, come to the Lord's table in a worthy manner. And part of the history of our own church, not our church, but our tradition, certainly in the Episcopal world as well, was if you examine yourself and find yourself lacking, then don't come, because you may be drinking damnation to yourself. Some of those people who were not considering the Lord's body in Corinth were sick, and some had died. So you shouldn't come because it's dangerous. That's not what we teach. We teach this is the Lord's table. He's invited you to eat. Come and eat. But my sin. Wait, what? But my sin. Well, didn't we confess that when we came in? Well, not this one. Okay, well, get it done. You can confess. Forgiveness comes quick, right? Forgiveness comes quick from the Lord. And so you don't get to opt out because you might be drinking damnation. Now, some of you might, because you're going to retain that sin and come to the Lord's table in presumption. That's dangerous. Don't do that. But we invite you all to come. And we don't just invite you. We say, if you belong to Jesus, come and eat with Jesus. Why would you not come and eat with Jesus? Well, because of my sin. Jesus dealt with your sin. Okay, so the same thing is true. Spiritual spankers. You have to spank your kids, but you can't spank your kids because you're angry. Well, stop being angry. Well, that's easy for you to say. You don't know me. You don't know my kids. You don't know how frustrating it is. Well, yeah, I think I do, because I'm human. But you can change. You can repent. Now, when it comes to disciplining particular behaviors, what we did, this is the methodology thing. You may do it differently. But when there was a spanking offense that occurred in our home, we would, if I was home, I would tell the children, I think Katie did the same thing, go upstairs, and we did it in our bedroom, go upstairs and sit on dad's bed. So there was this, you know, three-year-olds marching upstairs, hopefully completely repentant. Some of them, you know, this way, they were repentant by the end of it. But there was this break, right? Okay, you go up. Now, maybe I was frustrated. Maybe I was angry. Maybe I was dispassionately in my hilarious mode, but maybe I hadn't got there yet. But I can get there. I can get there pretty fast. I can repent of my sins and get my heart right in just a few seconds, if I only would. Or I can stay mad at this situation or mad at God or mad at my kid or whatever. Now, we also, when we disciplined our children, we also taught them to be disciplined, to control their emotions. Your emotions are your emotions. That means you get to control your emotions. If your emotions control you, you're in a world of hurt. So after we disciplined them, spanked them, and we're talking about spanking now, after we spanked them, we would hug them. If they're crying, they're repentant, hug them, we'd pray with them. And then we would say, look, you're forgiven, and you need to be restored to the fellowship of the family. If there was restitution that needed to be made, if they needed to ask somebody else forgiveness, we would require them to do that. And we would say, we're downstairs having a good time. You cannot come downstairs and have a good time until you have a good attitude. And you've got 5 minutes. Okay? Some of this has come up, I think, in the Nancy Wilson videos. It's like, you know, you're just forcing these little kids to have the right attitude or do the right thing. Exactly. Exactly. Guess what? They do it. They do it. And they learn to control themselves. So you got 5 minutes. You know, I don't want a kid up there for an hour. I mean, I remember it was Doug's story talking about, I think, Jim when they were disciplined and they're down there brooding for a long time and they just left him down there. I'm like, I didn't like that idea. No. Make them get it right. And then you can learn that you can do that. You control your emotions. So, you know, and sometimes it would go a little longer and I might go up there and say, look, you got a few more minutes. You need to come down. Get it right. Get your heart right. And they would. You know, little kids. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, they come down. They're happy. Maybe they're putting just a smile. But, you know, if you smile long enough, you actually become happy. You know, you try it. Some of you grumpy people, try smiling once in a while. I'd tell one of my pastors that. I said, look, you need to sound a little more authoritative. So the next sermon, he sounded angry. No, that wasn't nice. I didn't say angry, more authoritative. So when things are good, smile. When things are serious, you can be a little more serious. But if you smile, you actually become happy. So the kids learn this. I can change my attitude and my demeanor. And it teaches them a tremendous amount of discipline. So over the course of the rest of their life, they learn, I can control my emotions. And in order to be in right relationship and fellowship with other people, I need to do this. Okay, I'm going to just kind of finish with a laundry list of things to discipline. Think about questions. We'll have some time to do questions, and maybe we can do some how-to things or whatever, if you'd like. So all of that really set the stage for your home. What's your home like? You know, I know you have little ones and they sin in the most creative ways. Sometimes it's just dumb and you can see it coming from a mile away and it's hilarious. But, you know, humans are also creative in the way that they sin and keep things private and lie and do all sorts of other things. Well, you shouldn't be shocked by that. You should expect that. As Jim Wilson said years ago, little children are just sin machines waiting for motor skills. So that's what they are. They're sinners. They sin. Don't be shocked by that. Don't be offended by that because your children sin. That's what children do. Your job is to teach them how to do right and to do good. So part of it is just having the right heart and not being shocked or embarrassed by your children's behavior. And then you can set the standard. So what are some things to discipline? First of all, the main things to discipline are attitudes. And this has to do with controlling yourself and your feelings and emotions. Doesn't mean you don't have feelings and emotions, but you need to have them in a proper perspective. You know, the Bible says, even Christians, when somebody dies, we mourn, but we don't mourn like worldly people. It's not perpetual. It doesn't just go on and on and on. We mourn, but not as those without hope. We have a different way of doing things. We trust God, and then we find a place of control over our emotions. So that's a big thing, the attitudes and the feelings and the demeanor of your children. So the first thing you have to do is discipline yourself. Are you learning these things from God? If you're learning them, then you can teach them to your children. So manners is an area that you want to teach your children good manners. I get a manners book and read about that. Some of those manners are in the life of the church, and maybe the life of this church. You have enough older people here that some of them remember the days when children had manners. So maybe go talk to them and ask what those manners are. It's not a joke. I mean, I'm serious, because these things are leaving the church. Even in our church, it's become, we have so many new people now. We have a whole group of people who don't have these expectations of basic manners anymore. And so manners are all about loving other people. That's what manners are. It's loving others. And so you want to teach your children all the basic kinds of good manners, you know. Lying is something that is really a big one for your children. And the reason it is because if you have no trust, if people are going to lie to other people, then you have no trust, then you really don't have any basis to have an ongoing relationship. You know, it's true with your kids, but it's also true in your relationship with your spouse and your relationship with people in your church. So honesty and integrity is so important. And speaking the truth in love. Forgetting, depending on the level of what it was, but forgetting would be a spanking offense if they forgot something that was a primary issue in our home. And why? Forgetting? Wait a minute. How can you spank me for forgetting? Because I forgot. Well, forgetting is one of the chief sins in the Bible. And we should be teaching our children to have good memories. So over and over in the scriptures, the reason that Israel failed is because they forgot who God was and they forgot what God said. Forgetting is a really, really big problem. And if you'll discipline your children, it's not always spanking. I mean, some discipline is correction, words of correction, reminders. But if forgetting becomes a habitual behavior, then it's an excuse. Then it's a reason actually to spank your child. And guess what? Spanking is a really good memory tool. Not hearing is another one. For us, it was particularly when I said their name. So if I said Zachary, Elizabeth, and there was no response, that would be a disciplinable offense. And if they did it repeatedly again, if it was something that they were using as an excuse for not obeying, then it might be a spanking offense. You think, oh, not hearing, it's not their fault, they couldn't hear you. Yes, they could. Now, if we're in this room and everybody's jabbering away, and I hear somebody said, well, Pastor Hurt said, over in that far corner, when I hear my name, guess what? I can hear it right through all that cacophony of people. Your children can hear you, and they can hear you, especially when you say their name. And so expect these things in your home. For us, it was often, you know, attitudes things, the kids be upstairs playing, and we would hear something going off up there, you know, the attitudes creeping in and some kind of squabble. And I would say something like from downstairs, I don't like that tone. And the response would be, yes, Dad, and they'd fix it. You know, but you have to have that kind of level of expectation. Now, we didn't, you know, you can't fix everything, and your goal is for them to learn to fix the things themselves. Sometimes it would be the kids are going off on each other, and we would say, you guys need to find a solution to this. You know, before we get in there and investigate everything and become the judge and the jury, I want them to deal with their own problems. Okay, you have a problem here? What's the solution? I still do this as a pastor over and over and over. We had an issue at our church recently while I was here. Somebody texted me. And they texted me the problem. I don't want to hear about your problems. I don't want to hear problems. What's the solution? So you want to teach your kids to be able to solve their own problems. So when you hear these bad attitudes or when you hear these fights going on, as they get older, you might intervene if it's sort of caustic and dangerous, or you might say, you guys need to figure out a way to solve this problem. And then if they can't, then again, some more serious discipline can help that. So I kind of put that in the forgetting and not hearing category because I think these become excuses that people have, or like your kids will say, well, he did this or she did that, and they want to blame somebody else rather than taking responsibility for their own behavior. Responses to father and mother. I don't know what the culture is here in Florida. And when we moved to Virginia, people would say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, no, sir, no, ma'am. That wasn't the case when we were growing up in Idaho. That was already gone. There's no yes, sir, and yes, ma'aming in Idaho, except maybe at some of the churches, CRC churches there. But even there, it's just not a cultural expectation. But it was so great to come to the South and expect that. It was a way for your kids to really respect and honor you, and also to get their attention when you give them a direct command and they say yes, sir, or yes, ma'am. And so how they respond to parents was something that we disciplined, whether you yes, sir, or no, sir, or whether you just expect them to look you in the face, to answer honestly and clearly. But you need to teach them these behaviors. That's part of manners. How many kids now, they're so distracted by their phone or whatever else, but they don't even look at people when they talk. These are things that you have to teach. You teach them, first of all, in your home. By the way, failure to look at people often is an indication something's wrong with them, right? You know, when your kids won't look at you, why can't they look at you? Something's going on there. Not always. It might just be bad manners or bad eye contact. But if you have good eye contact and now they won't look at you, that's an indication that something is amiss. You better do some investigating. I put in here, I mentioned too, like, yes, sir. One of the things I did with my kids, particularly as they got older, you know, some of you, classical ed, what is it, the sing-song stage and then dialectic and rhetoric. What's the first stage, sing-song, what's that called? Huh? Pole parrot. And then, you know, they're just soaking everything in. But then they get some logic in them, which means they want to argue with you, right? And you want to embrace that. And then when they get to the older stage where they get to express their ideas and try to be persuasive, you want to encourage that. You want to have conversations with your kids. But you also want to have the time where, like, okay, we had the conversation. We don't agree. I'm the dad. You're doing it. And that means no more talk. So what I did with my kids when it was at that point, and we're talking probably 11, 12, 13-year-olds, they're just wanting to argue, and I would say, yes, sir. And they would have to say, yes, sir. And that meant we're done talking. You know, but we do want to talk. You want to talk to your kids. You want to engage them. But you don't want them to be unnecessarily argumentative and combative with you. You have to have a way to say, all right, I gave you some room. We're at the end of this. And they then respect and honor you. So you want to have that, I think, with dad, but also with mom. And then things like, again, these are attitudes, rolling the eyes, shuffling the feet as they walk, mumbling, toward your parents. These are all indicators something's wrong with the kid. So, you know, we did a lot of practicing in our home. I would have the formation thing. I would yell, and I would have the kids run to dad, and then I'd line them up in formation. And in our home, I would do practice obedience thing. So I give them opportunities to succeed and to obey in a non-threatening environment where we're just having fun and it's just, there's no discipline, it's not really disobedience, but I would just say things like, you know, go over there by that wall, Zach, you know, come here, come right here, you know, just silly kind of things, it was fun and games, but I'm teaching them how to obey their dad and to do it because it's, you know, out of a right heart because it's enjoyable. But things like when kids roll their eyes or they mumble to you, those are indications something's wrong with them. Don't get super frustrated, but discipline it and help them get their heart right. Sibling fighting and bickering. If you have a large home, there's going to be plenty of conflict. But you want the kids to learn to really love each other and be loyal to each other. So they have to work out their problems. But if there's ongoing strife and bickering amongst the kids, They have to deal with that. You can deal with it when they're little. You can force them to deal with it. But as they get older, they need to really confess their sins and forgive one another. Just a word. I'm going to finish, I think, here because this is plenty of stuff. But on the forgiveness confession sort of process, we made our kids say the words. I think it's important. Sometimes when people talk about getting things right, they talk about apologizing. And so you say something like, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean it." What's the proper response to "I'm sorry, I didn't mean it"? Probably like, "Oh, that's okay." But the problem is, maybe you're sorry, but the real problem is you did mean it. When you were rude, or when you said this thing, or when you didn't, when you said something bad about me behind my back, or whatever. So apologies should be more like the excuse me sort of thing. We made the kids say, you know, "When I hit you, I was wrong to hit you. Will you forgive me?" That's a different transaction. One, it forces the kid to say, "I was wrong," which is hard for anybody to do, but really good for you. And then it forces also forgiveness. And now you have a contract. When someone says, "I forgive you," you can now hold them accountable. When they express anger at you again for the thing that you did yesterday, you can remind them, "You're right, but I asked your forgiveness and you said you forgive me. That's in the past. It can't be brought into the present." And so you have this contract of forgiveness. So it's really helpful. I would encourage you to do this. Have your kids do it. And also, like Katie mentioned, you know, I mentioned parents confessing your sins to your kids. That's really, really important. If you haven't done that, you need to be able to do that. When you sin against your kids, you need to say, "I sinned against you when I yelled at you. I shouldn't have yelled at you. And I did it in front of everybody. Will you forgive me?" Oh, it's just, that's the sort of thing that ensures goodness in your home over a long time. Now, hopefully you don't sin that much against your kids that way. But when you do, you should be able to humble yourself and ask forgiveness. And even when I mentioned before about restoring kids who are wayward, I think parents should go, you don't have to say, you know, the kids are adults now. They're responsible for their own behavior before the Lord. But you can also find a way, if you contributed to their disobedience, and it's something you can put your finger on, "When I sinned against you this way, when we were raising you, will you forgive me?" Now, they may or may not forgive you, but it's now in their court. You know, as such as it's responsible for you, you're trying to be at peace with all men. But it's a wonderful thing to do for adults to do with wayward children because, and you don't have to keep doing it. This is kind of a one-time thing, really, I think. You say, "My experience with wayward children is that they say my parents were too harsh on me and they disciplined me too harsh. It wasn't fair." And it's usually just the opposite. And I find it's the kids that weren't very disciplined very well, and they use that as an excuse against their parents. Now, the other ultra-harsh thing could be true, but that's not been my experience as I've seen actually rebellious children. So one of the things you might have to do is go to them and say, "You know, we didn't discipline you very well. We weren't very consistent in our home. And we didn't discipline you when you were little, and we didn't hold you accountable." Now, they're thinking just the opposite. "No, you were too harsh." Whatever the truth is, speak the truth in love. Tell the truth and ask their forgiveness. They may or may not forgive you, but it's now in their court. If they do forgive you, they're on their way back to the faith. I mean, they're doing forgiveness. That's a Christian thing. You know, so it enables some sort of future relationship. It may not. Some kids are just bitter and they're not going to get over it, and that's the way it is. And that's back to trusting in God's grace for the future. But if you set that standard in your home when your kids are little and when they're growing up in your home, you're not leaving them any room for ongoing bitterness against their parents and blaming their parents when they grow up. I mean, they might still do that. People are people. Sometimes they're really inconsistent. But you want to take away those excuses if you can. I'm going to stop right there, and I will take questions for you.